Hi, and welcome to The Matchmaker Is In. I'm Karen Webster. As always, I'm joined by David Evans, economist and author of the book Matchmakers, who's joining me today. David, thanks for making the time.
Hey, Karen. Thanks a lot for hosting us.
And our guest today is Anthony Walton, CEO and founder of Iliad Solutions. Anthony, thanks for joining us today as well.
You're very welcome.
So let me give a little context to the conversation that we're going to have today. I think we're going to take a bit of a different twist. I think an interesting twist, not so much to talk about matchmakers per se, since Iliad isn't a matchmaker, but rather a very important player in helping matchmakers and matchmakers in waiting remove the friction from the payments experience, which can really get into the way of what we would consider successful ignition. So Iliad is a testing platform that helps solution providers see where things can get messed up, helps them incorporate new innovations into the existing process, and advises these companies on really how to get past them in order to deliver not just a product that works, but a solution that adds value to the many parties within the payments ecosystem that really want to make things better. So Anthony, help us fill in the gaps a little bit. I'm sure I didn't do justice to the platform that you have and what you do, but give us a little color commentary about the work that you do in support of matchmakers in payments.
Sure, thanks for that. I think we're pretty close actually. I think what we see in the industry is a lot of new initiatives, a lot of innovation, but very rarely complete innovative end-to-end solutions. Nothing works independently of the existing payment schemes, or very rarely, should I say. So if you take an initiative such as Apple Pay, which was groundbreaking in its approach, and the user experience is fantastic, and the technology on the handset is great, underpinning that at some level is either transaction that will run through one of the schemes, and underpinning that is tokenization, which makes the device secure in compromisable information is actually transmitted in real time. So a lot of what that initiative was making sure that this great, shiny new technology actually works in synchronization and with the interdependencies that come from working on the old systems. But to that, because of just talking about tokenization, the existing systems have to support tokenization, and that's an extra system, if you like, a subsystem within their infrastructure. So what we're finding is that even the traditional systems are getting more and more stretched. You probably have an interface now to something like a digital wallet, which wouldn't have been there 5-10 years ago. You will now have tokenization. But these are very rarely completely new systems, and they tend to be bolted onto legacy systems. And, of course, that means a challenge when it comes to ensuring the integrity of that and building the trust and confidence that you wish to take that proposition to market.
So when you talk about the work that you're examining and kind of helping to integrate or to make sure is integrated properly into these new methods of payment, you're not necessarily always looking at directly the consumer experience. You're trying to make the experience between the consumer touch point and the network rails touch point streamlined. Is that it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're buying a pair of shoes, for example, on your mobile phone and you're paying with Apple Pay, the transaction doesn't stop anywhere soon. The funds have to take place, the authorization has to take place, the settlement and clearing process. So, it's not just a single transaction. That might hit maybe 10, 12 systems within a second. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to ensure the integrity of that unless you have that extended coverage all the way downstream. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you can take shortcuts and you can stop it to test, the different screen flows and things like that. But fundamentally, our view is that the testing has to match the real-life system as far as possible. So that's one of the challenges we try and help people with, is that virtualized coverage of all the endpoints.
Interesting. So when a new technology player like an Apple Pay or an Android Pay or pick the pay that is your favorite, when they are thinking about taking something new to market, do they understand the number of interdependencies that all have to work seamlessly to make that consumer experience as seamless and frictionless as we know it to be?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, they certainly do when they start engaging with what we could call a friendly card scheme or a friendly issuer. All the challenges are then pointed out to them, perhaps when they initiate the project, they're maybe not quite aware. But the card schemes will soon tell them about the, you know, the importance of resilience, the challenge of security. One of the things we do find is that every time you introduce a new channel to the consumer, it can bring a new set of security challenges. And the schemes and the issuers and to some extent the PSPs and the acquirers will be all over that. So they very, very quickly get exposed to the, you know, these systems are genuinely mission critical. I often hear about people's emails being mission critical, and to some extent they are, but if your payment switch goes down, if your issuer platform is compromised, or if your switch is compromised, then they are genuinely mission critical. So the new players very, very quickly do get exposed to the rigor of testing that needs to be done in the payments industry, I guess.
So how long does the testing typically take place from the time you start until the client basically has the thing debugged? Is it like a day, or is it a week, or a month?
No, I wish it was. I'd say a minimum of 3 months, generally.
Really?
I mean, you know, we have customers around the world. We often see really good innovations stuck in testing for months, yeah. I think one of the challenges of testing is that, as we were saying earlier in the conversation, we do tend to get involved at the beginning of projects because, you know, if you're putting something new to market, we'll be all over it before it goes out. But often we find that testing is almost like the Cinderella of the IT industry, and it's something that can be left to the end. So our challenge is moving, and it's a cliche term, but that left shift, trying to put the facilities and the virtualization concepts in place that allow new market entrants and the people taking delivery of their software to start testing earlier in the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I find that kind of complements the newer ways of developing software, which is obviously Agile, CI, DevOps, whatever this week's catchphrase is. But fundamentally, you know, in the good old days when we got a new clearing system or a new change for an interface because Amex had gone into a market, for example, you know, you'd probably develop for 6 months and then the test team would get it for 6 weeks. The test teams now are probably getting code dropped twice a week, and that very much changes the way that they have to test. So we're all about trying to bring testing into that process earlier. Obviously, again, a cliche statistic, but the earlier you test, you find a bug, it's exponentially cheaper to fix it than it is if it goes anywhere near a production system. So that's kind of the challenge we're working with at the minute. And it's a very dynamic space at the minute. The way people are developing software is changing. The dependency on legacy systems is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
And layered above that, there's a lot of what we call the shiny new stuff of people trying to knock on the door and say, well, this is a better way to pay. So there's a challenge across the piece.
What are the common, I don't know whether mistake is the right word, but what are some of the, I guess, the vulnerabilities that you see over and over again, and how many of them really have the potential to then require that the solution provider go back and revisit things from the beginning because the consumer experience or the merchant experience, if left unchecked, would be a disaster.
Sure. I mean, this is a very broad brush statement, but what we see at the minute is a lot of people with legacy systems, and this goes to not just software suppliers, but the banks and schemes themselves. They will assume that in order to interface to a new piece of technology, and we'll use Apple Pay as an example, all they have to do is interface with an API. Yep.
Huh.
Now, we'll often find that that API will work perfectly correctly, but then some feature of the legacy software, which was never perhaps exposed before, comes to the forefront during that testing. Then all of a sudden, it's not quite as easy as having to use an API call. It's, well, this field doesn't go from this end of the transaction to the other. So we maybe have to change a transaction record or a database record. And I think the problem is that it's very, very hard to first guess all these changes ahead of actually integrating the systems together. There is a lot of interdependencies between components, and every component in the chain is clearly a point of failure. So I think it's almost going back to old-fashioned engineering concepts and not assuming that it's as easy as adding another API. Yeah? It very seldom is. And these are the kind of things that tend to come out towards the end of the test cycle, where perhaps it's just assumed it will be tested. But our message is we can't assume that anything in this chain may be 100% compatible with the new technology, and that has to be checked. And the earlier we can check it, the more chance of success.
Where do you see the developers making trade-offs that you think are acceptable? Because I guess, there's always trade-offs to be considered, especially when you're taking something new to market. I mean, even if it relates to some things that maybe push the boundaries a little bit on the security front, just to remove the friction from getting a cardholder activated and in business.
Yeah, I mean, what we find with the current approach, and I won't sound overly critical of the testing industry because I'm in it, but we are kind of testing like it was 20 years ago. We are still assuming that we have these monolithic systems, and they're really not anymore. So what we do find is that by the challenges I've just explained, whereby things are spotted later in the cycle, that kind of compresses the amount of time you actually have to do the test, because the missing a deadline is very expensive. If you're trying to launch, I'll take a digital wallet as an example, in competition with three other digital wallets, you have to onboard customers, merchants, acquirers as quickly as possible. So the challenge is, as that deadline is not moving, you have to compress the amount of testing you have to do, and then you have to start cutting corners. So you say, okay, well, it's working fine up to this point. Let's just assume when it hits settlement and clearing, everything will work fine. And that may be the case, and often it is. But often it isn't, and the less time you have, the less time you have to react, the more likely, in my experience, you are to compromise that testing. You start thinking, what can we get away with? And, nobody wants to be the guy crossing his fingers when you put some software into production. And one of the other things that's changed is people's behavior. 10 years ago, if I'd have gone out on a Friday night for a drink, tried to get some money out of the cash machine, and there was nobody in that machine, I'd have thought he hasn't got any money in. Now with Twitter, I can probably search the name of my bank and find out that the system's down. And then, departments are battling to get messages out saying it's back up. And then Twitter's flooded with people saying, well, I can't get any money out. So, people's behaviors is changing as well. It's very, very hard to make a mistake in public now. and that's the risk you take if you, if you cut corners, I guess.
So Anthony, one part of the problem, I gather, is just in the software design process that needs to be debugged.
Yep.
How much of the problem is on the other side, which is things that payment players basically could change in order to reduce the friction that the software developers are dealing with? I mean, have you seen things where you say, here's some low-hanging fruit that if these guys just did this, it would make this testing process go a whole lot more smoothly?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. I mean, the problem is the agile guys, the new technology guys, they will have new ways of testing, and they're getting code out very, very quickly, and they're doing test-driven development and all this kind of good new stuff. The problem often is when it hits a legacy system and all of a sudden they have to integrate with the new system. Now, if you look at a very, very simple example, kind of on the periphery of payments, if you take Uber, which is, making a call to an API that's checking the GPS, it's making another one to where the cars are, it's making another one to PayPal for the payment. Not necessarily 24/7, where you have access to all those components. So what we're trying to encourage banks to do is to virtualize those key components so they can 24/7. Okay, the coverage might not be 100%. But at least they're getting an end-to-end flow. And the more time they invest in those virtualization models, the more realistic they can make them. So if, for example, we take a new market entrant, say UnionPay coming in and somebody wants to test with them, we can very, very quickly build a virtualized model that says, okay, odd numbers are good, even numbers are bad. And that can get some of the developers working. The protocol will be, the messages will be built correctly, the sign sequences. But of course, that won't mimic the behavior of a real card. So you can then start adding rules to the model to make it almost as precise as the system itself. But I think unless you get that virtualized coverage of every component, you cannot automate your testing. Because to start simulators, you know, if you've got two simulators like we did in the old days, you know, Visa and a MasterCard one, that's fine, yeah? The guy's gone for a coffee, he's going to come back, you start it up, yeah? If you've got 10 simulators, that gets very, very hard to automate. If nothing else, you end up with 10 different sets of results in different formats. Pulling all that information together is very, very complex. Now, if you've got a virtualization model where everything is synchronized and perhaps in a database, it's easier to show those dashboard views of transactions, and it's very much easier to spot bugs in the flow, and then as you invest in the model, bugs in the actual logic of what you're trying to do. So that's what we're trying to encourage people to do, and you know, it's an ongoing challenge.
How do you actually, I mean, it sounds very complicated. It also sounds like it's easier, instead of testing on 10 different ones, to sort of suggest what are the four that you really need or the five that you really need. Are people starting to think that way as well?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you know, I often talk to people about the exponential cost of running multiple simulation points, and it generally does get very complicated the more different points you have. So we are finding people who will concentrate on the big four or five. What we often find, though, in the payment space is it is the edge of the testing that causes the problems.
Right.
You know, a lot of card schemes will get problems around the mandate changes, for example, yeah? A member might start using the facility 6 hours early and that messes something up, or something else will be badly implemented. Any change, any significant change you put into the mix is basically where you're going to attract the attention. So as tempting as it is to try and cut back on the simulation points, it can be on those very edges that where you do get the where you do get the outages. And fundamentally, these systems are very well tested. Our customers, the banks, the schemes, the software providers invest an awful lot of time in testing. And it does tend to be the things on the edges that trip things up. Something out of sequence, for example, we've seen in the UK recently. You know, tapes loaded out of sequence because they're using legacy systems. Things that would be very hard to pick up on in a test do happen. So it's, I don't wish to sound some kind of paranoid tester here, but it is very hard to cut back and focus on small areas. I think it's very much about coverage.
What are some of the things that happen, you know, kind of outside of the solution provider's domain, so their own development, their own thinking about features and functions that have an impact on testing? Are there things like, you know, changes in regulation or issues related to compliance that often need to be considered as well?
Absolutely. I mean, there's change in a number of ways. There's obviously technological change. People always want the newest, shiniest. You know, you want to use your iPad to pay, your iPhone to pay, rather. There's obviously the moving target of security all the time, but there's often these, you know, these mandated changes. So immediate payments, for example. Now, in the UK, that was faster payments. That was actually mandated by the government. You didn't have a choice. If you wanted to keep your banking license, you pretty much had to get on board with it. So you get these internal and external challenges on these systems. You know, internally, of course, you want to attract more customers. You want to be more efficient. You want to save money. But externally, you've got the change in technology that's driving changes to the system. You've got the changes in government, not government necessarily, but the legislative mandated changes. And also you have the change in behavior of customers. My kids are paying for things very different. They're not, I've been with the same bank since I was at university. I doubt that my children are going to be the same. So there's a number of internal and external features that are pushing the payment system all the time. and it's never at rest. And you know, things that aren't at rest are liable to be complicated to test and liable to failure. So we kind of see it across the whole spectrum.
How has the emphasis on security and the threats, you know, around cyber and the fraudsters influence the design and therefore the process that you then undertake when you're testing these new solutions?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like a carrot dangled in front of anybody who wants to abuse these systems every time anything goes live, I guess. We've probably got a couple of weeks window where people don't really know how it works. I mean, if you look at Apple Pay again, maybe a cliched example, but you know, one of the things that underpins that is tokenization. And tokenization is fundamentally a security feature that had to be put in place to de-risk the handset. Again, it wasn't invented by Apple, but it's, you know, it was very, very well integrated by them. So you'll see these subtle changes to security evolving with every kind of cycle in the technology. You know, in the good old days, it would be DES and triple DES and SSL, and now it's a combination of all with tokenization as an even more secure layer. So, I mean, you can't underplay the risk of security when we're moving money around, and nobody would.
Right. You talked a little bit about the trade-offs between, you know, testing and simulating a variety of different things, you know, in the context of the design of the software. But help us understand a little bit about the trade-offs that that are being consciously made about the consumer experience. So it's the essential things that would be great to have, but also the things that could help one area but hurt in another. Are those kind of active conversations that you're involved with?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, you know, a customer journey will be very well defined when we start a test process. It's very rare, I think, that they actually compromise on the features that will be presented on a handset. Where corners may be cut, and this is not telling tales out of school, is ensuring it will work through every scheme, through every issuer, and that, in fact, any clearing and settlement functions, again, will work as smoothly as they should. So there's a huge investment in the consumer experience, as you'd expect. Nobody wants failed checkouts, you know, clickouts when you're purchasing. But perhaps the cost, you know, perhaps that gets the attention, rightly so, you might argue, but some of the back-end features may be neglected, and perhaps that's where you'll find some of the failures.
Got it. So we always like to ask those who come onto the show to reflect on just matchmakers more broadly, and who, you know, within the perspective of those who have done a very good job of figuring out how to design a platform that engages multiple stakeholders successfully. Mm-hmm. A lot of people tend to do the common denominator of Uber, but you can't do that one. Any come to mind based on your experiences around the payments landscape?
Well, Karen, before the answer is, he can't say Apple Pay either. So we have to knock out Apple and Uber.
If you tell me I can't use the word blockchain, I'll have to hang up the phone, you know. They're my three golden silver bullets. I think to sort of change the question slightly, I think what the schemes are doing is very underrating. The schemes are putting a huge amount of investment into ensuring these rails are suitable for moving forward. You know, huge amounts of testing going on there, huge amounts of innovation, the adoption of new technologies like virtual machines and, you know, new technologies like using virtualization and Docker and all kinds of things like that, where you can get coverage much easier than you could, and you can distribute that testing around the world by people using browsers rather than using standalone tools. So I wouldn't want to pick out a particular, I mean, Uber and Apple Pay, of course, are the two of the finest. I love OpenPay, OpenTable, for example. I used that in the States last week. I think that's incredibly seamless, but it doesn't plug into payments, unfortunately. I think if you could do that, and maybe it does in the States, the way that they can integrate technology is fantastic. And I'm a sucker for anybody who knows where I am from my GPS and can match me up with anything locally. So I think there's a lot of new initiatives coming out here with the beacons in store and things like that. I don't like getting adverts being pushed at me, but I can see some very useful functions coming through the pipeline there for giving me a discount when I'm just about to buy something I'm going to buy anyway, hopefully. That's it.
Not sure that's always good for the merchant, but it certainly is a good use case for the technology. But I think you're right. It's a, you know, the beacons certainly are an area that really hot a couple of years ago seemed, and in the retail environment seemed to have kind of waned a little bit, but I think are being refined and introduced in a way that does add the value that you
Absolutely, and smooths it out. I mean, you pay in an Apple shop, and the fact that the receipts email to you and things like that, I think anybody can do a value add, a genuine value add. You know, I don't like technology just for the sake of it and a feature that I don't want. But I think some very interesting things happening there. I mean, ideally, when I go and buy a cup of coffee, I want a 10% discount. I want to pay for it, and I want some points towards my next 10% discount in one tap. That's the kind of features I think that drive acceptance.
You're very demanding, Anthony.
I am. I drink a lot of coffee as well.
I think it's the vision. I think it's all in how it works, and all in the expectation too that regardless of where you grab that coffee, the experience is similar. And I think we're a long way from that.
But it has to be seamless. And the thing is, the more you get used to this kind of features, the more mainstream it is. The bigger the shock when it actually fails, and people get upset. You know, if I tap my card and I can't get my coffee, I wouldn't say I'm furious, but I'm not happy. Maybe I won't use that card again, and maybe it's not that card's fault. But, you know, I think people are changing the behavior very quickly. That seamlessness, that's probably not even a word, but they're making that process as seamless as possible, and it has to be slick, and it has to, you know, Uber's great. Same we're not talking about. But the first time you use Uber, you're kind of hooked on it, regardless of all the controversy about how people are paid. But as a piece of technology, I think it's fantastic. And I think anything that gets payments to such a slick interface that works seamlessly every time is going to be a real winner.
And it all comes back to good testing, right, Anthony?
Everything in my life comes back to testing. I mean, when I was at school, kids wanted to be astronauts, but no, not me.
You wanted to be a tester from the very beginning?
I wanted to test the rocket, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, David, any final comments before we let Anthony get on with his day?
No, I think the only thing I would say is, you and I have talked about this before, Karen. The longer you work in the payments industry, just the more remarkable it is how many really interesting players there are out there that make the whole thing work. I mean, I had no idea that a company like Gilead was around doing this kind of stuff, and it's really interesting to hear all about it.
It's fascinating. Anthony, thanks so much for giving us the benefit of your insight and your perspective on the importance of really evaluating every aspect of the experience, whether the consumer sees it or not, because not everything is visible to the consumer, but it all makes the process work really well. It's been a pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you.
And thanks, everyone, for joining us today. I hope everyone has a lovely rest of their day. Thank you.